Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 9th day of May, 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. He'll help us, too, take a look at tomorrow's USDA World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates. It will be the first stab USDA takes at the brand new crop year and their supply and demand tables. In preview of that, we'll hear again a story we ran a couple of weeks ago with University of Illinois agricultural economist Daryl Good. He and Scott Irwin put together some supply and demand tables for this year, unusual for them. We'll take you back through those numbers as we head into this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. You may find us online, of course, at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
That's the way the numbers finished up in Chicago for a Monday afternoon. Corn futures lower for the day at $3.67¾, down 8¼. July at $3.69, 8½ lower. And December corn down 7¾ at $3.77. May beans at $10.18¾, 7½ lower. July at $10.26½, down 8¼. November beans, $10.15¾, down 6¼ cents. Bean oil, 27 cents lower at $32.54. And the bean meal down a buck at $340.20. Soft red winter wheat down 6¼ at $4.47, and July at $4.56½ down 7¼. The hard red July at $4.46¼ down 7¼ cents. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the nearby June at $123.25, up $2.52½. August at $119.55, $1.65 higher. May feeder cattle $3.42½ higher at $150.80. Since August at $150.60, they're up $3.42½. And lean hogs for the day in the May contract, $76.10, 70 cents lower. However, the June contract, $1.25 lower at $80.25. You're listening to the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. Be sure to visit us tomorrow at 11 a.m. Central Time for the USDA's first look at the 2016-17 or current marketing year, the one you're putting into ground for corn and soybeans now. Supply and demand tables, I'll post them there as an embedded file for my Twitter feed. That's at willag.org or follow me at Commodity Week on Twitter.
Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
Let's take a look at what some of the energies are doing at this point in time. June contract, crude oil, $43.41 a barrel, $1.25 lower. Ethanol futures at $1.49¢, that's down 0.2 cents. Rather 2 cents, and the gasoline in the June contract at $1.44¼ is 5¼ cents lower. Heating oil in the June contract at $1.28¢, down a nickel for the day, and natural gas is 0.2 cents higher at $2.03¢. Dow Jones Industrial Average at 17,666, 5 points lower. U.S. dollar is up 0.227 at 94.11, and gold futures at $1,265.50 for a troy ounce, down $28.50 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area this evening. Showers and thunderstorms, a low of 60 degrees tonight on a southeast wind at 11 to 13. Gusting to 20, chance of rainfall in the area set at 90% for the evening. Tomorrow, showers and thunderstorms will continue, a high of 75, south winds at 11 to 14, gusting to 20, and we'll have an 80% chance of rainfall. Tuesday evening, more showers and thunderstorms, mainly before 8 in the evening. That's set at 70%. Mostly cloudy, a low of 60 degrees on a southeast wind at 6 to 10, gusting to 15. And then on Wednesday, a chance of showers and thunderstorms before 8 in the morning, more showers after 2 in the afternoon, mostly sunny otherwise, a high near 83 degrees. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of this half hour.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, lending support to generations of farm families for 100 years. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit Illinois offers financial products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this ninth day of May, 2016. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
This is the day before USDA releases its first supply and demand set of tables for the coming crop year. What do we expect tomorrow?
Well, we'll see what they come up with. The new crop supply demand balance sheet still has some moving parts. We'll be looking at planted acres, then eventually harvested acres, and of course the yield will be a moving target throughout the growing season. Then the thing that they expect here, old crop and new crop, is some increase in demand. Ideas that maybe exports are a little better than we've been led to believe here during the winter, and so therefore maybe the old crop, even the new crop, ending stocks could be a little tight as we go through the growing season. But as you mentioned, it's sort of the first benchmark to go off of, and we'll debate that for the next year and a half after we see the numbers tomorrow. There, Todd.
That would be a long debate, but that'll give us something to talk about for a while, an 18-month period or so. Hey, so why was it that we were lower in both corn and soybeans today?
Well, fundamentally, we saw a little better forecast in the southern hemisphere, a little more moisture in Brazil, a little less rain in Argentina. Also, too, meal demand kind of slowed a little bit, so that kind of limited the buying here in the U.S. meal market and returned the beans. Then, too, more talk of China's going to release some beans out of the reserve without replacing them. It's going to amount to about 100,000 tons a week, about a total of 3.8 million metric tons between now and year end. That's a decent amount, but they import 80 to 85 million metric tons, and they have ending stocks upwards towards 16 million metric tons. So, that news kind of said, now, wait a minute here. We're at the upper end of the range we've been in for the last week and a half, and got the report tomorrow. Maybe it's time to, move to the sidelines a little bit. Spec leave-wise, the hedge funds, they ran the market up, and the liquidation sort of came from them throughout the trading session. So we'll kind of see what the numbers show tomorrow and look for the next bit of news, whether it's the weather or export news.
What are you hearing from farmers? I take it they're probably not in the field again and won't be for a while yet.
Yeah, it really varies a lot from region to region. As a nation, I think this afternoon's crop conditions report, planting progress going to show corn 60-65% of the nation in the ground. Beans in the neighborhood 25-28% in the ground. There's guys done, there's guys that haven't really gotten a good start yet. The main area that we visit with is, southern part of Illinois and Indiana. Even portions of northern Indiana, there's some spots there. So it's a situation where, most of the nation has made some rapid headway, but there's some areas that need a good few days of warm, dry weather to get going, particularly in corn. And there's been quite a bit of talk about switching with the recent price action in through here. There's guys talking a little bit more about going beans, giving up on some corn. But the thing is, if you go down that path, you got to make sure you do some marketing at these higher level, because there's nothing worse than making that commitment, all of a sudden something fundamentally comes along, and all of a sudden beans back down to where they started from a month ago from here, then not being able to take advantage of that. So we'll see what the weather produces here and see if this wet areas can get going here and get caught up here in the next 2 to 3 weeks.
Do we need to be concerned at all about what's happening in Brazil? I know a couple of weeks ago that was making big news in the marketplace and the idea that they would have an impeached president. Now they're making some waves, I think, at least what I've been reading, about not moving forward with that. I think the dollar has moved higher on part of that particular story. What fundamentally are you watching?
Well, I think that news is, you know, been well advertised. Those means are, moving out of the country. We'll continue to monitor that as we move along here. I think what more is more of a headline news than what's been really passed on is their corn situation. This past winter, on social media particularly, you had an elevator in a particular town or area. Well, normally you see semis come in or trucks come in at a regular pace to move corn out. And there are several situations where there's like 30, 40, 50 trucks all at once showing up in an elevator and cleaning an elevator completely out of corn. And so there might be more of a story of Brazil's corn situation and needing corn, and that might open the door even more for us to see the U.S. benefit from corn sales to Brazil. So I think that's a story that's going to be a factor here as we move down the road, Todd.
Is this needed corn for their livestock production? That would certainly be different than if they were doing industrial uses where they might be able to slow down, because with livestock production, they'd have to continue to feed.
I think it's a combination. I think the big thing is livestock. And there is an economic advantage to buying cheaper Argentine corn, too, and that's been taking place for some time. But, two, with the dry weather concerns, there's ideas that sugar cane production could be down and overall ethanol production could be a concern as we move down the road, too. So the dry weather in Brazil just doesn't only affect corn. It affects coffee, sugar, and some of these other commodities also.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate you taking the time with us today.
Very good. Take care.
Mm-hmm. Kurt Kimmel is with Bates Commodities. He's out of Normal, Illinois. Joins us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Don't forget, tomorrow morning, USDA releases the supply and demand tables, the WASDE figures for the 2016-17 growing season, or the corn and the soybeans that are being put into the ground now. It will be the first time they will release those numbers. Of course, they probably should be using some of the figures that were released in March, like the prospective plantings report and some of the acreage figures. The numbers will be taken with a grain of salt on that case just a bit, but they are the first release, and they'll come out at 11 a.m. Central Time. You can check out our website at willag.org. I'll have my Twitter feed posted there as an embedded file, or you can just follow me at Commodity Week, and I'll have those numbers to you as quickly as possible after the 11 o'clock time frame. And by quickly, it should be within a few seconds. Those should begin to start to trail in off of at Commodity Week. So visit our website, willag.org. Look me on Twitter. Look me up, that is, on Twitter at Commodity Week. In today's agricultural news, presidential candidate Hillary Clinton is breaking with President Obama on trade, and she now opposes the Trans-Pacific Partnership deal, or the TPP. Clinton signaled in a questionnaire response to Oregon labor unions and environmental groups that she would oppose a TPP vote during a lame duck Congress, which is a vote President Obama is pushing before he leaves office. American Farm Bureau Executive Director Dale Moore says Clinton's renewed opposition and that of her opponents doesn't help.
It certainly makes it more difficult. It does not make it unique, because I can't think of a trade agreement that hasn't gone through, whether it's during a presidential election year or an odd-numbered year or a midterm election year. Anytime a trade agreement comes up, it is subjected to a whole host of political winds from both sides of the aisle.
Moore points out that President Obama, when he was a senator running for president, opposed President Bush's trade agreements but ended up revising and pressing for them. So did Hillary Clinton as Obama's Secretary of State, but her newfound opposition may give TPP backers more reason to push for a vote now, not after a new administration takes over.
If we had our preference, we would have it done right now, but that's not the reality. The reality is that the most likely scenario for this year would be during a potential lame duck session, post-election. And so from that standpoint, that's what we're gearing our strategy to.
White House Press Secretary Josh Earnest says the administration is working with GOP leaders in Congress on the timing of a possible vote. But the Washington Post reports Earnest says pro-trade lawmakers may be running out of time. Well, the U.S. District Court in Washington, D.C. granted the National Pork Producers motion to intervene in the lawsuit brought by the Humane Society of the U.S. against the USDA over the sale of the pork, the other white meat trademarks. The National Hog Farmer reports the NPPC sold the trademarks to the Pork Board for $35 million. NPPC financed the purchase over 20 years, making the Pork Board's annual payments around $3 million. In 2012, HSUS, a lone farmer in Iowa, and the Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement filed suit against the USDA seeking to have the sale rescinded. The U.S. District Court dismissed it for lack of standing, but it was reinstated by the Court of Appeals. Subsequently, the USDA agreed to review the purchase and the contract valuations of the trademarks. The Ag Marketing Service said the trademarks are worth between $113 million and $132 million. HSUS is pressing forward with the lawsuit in spite of the trademarks being worth four times what they were sold for in 2006. HSUS pegs the value at between $2.6 and $17.6 million. Well, the U.S. Grains Council says U.S. exports of all feed grains from September through March of this marketing year totaled 51.4 million metric tons. That's down 7% from the same time last year. Higher exports of DDGs, corn gluten feed, corn gluten meal, sorghum, and pork working to offset weaker exports of corn, barley, beef, poultry, and ethanol. Last marketing year, U.S. feed grains exports in all forms totaled a near-record 100 million tons, representing 26% of U.S. production of corn, barley, and sorghum. And finally today, blends of petroleum-based gasoline with 10% ethanol account for about 95% of the fuel consumed in U.S. motor vehicles. The analysis from the Energy Information Administration comes as the ethanol industry continues its dispute with EPA over its decision to lower biofuel blending requirements set when the Renewable Fuel Standard was reauthorized in 2007. The industry said the lower requirements are killing investment and restricting producers' ability to generate more ethanol. EPA's proposal for 2017 and other blending requirements are currently under review by the Office of Management and Budget. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Monday afternoon. Don't forget that tomorrow the United States Department of Agriculture will release its latest World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate updates, including this year's supply and demand tables for corn and soybeans. It's the first release that they will have for the 2016-17 year. That's at 11 a.m. Central Time, and you'll find all those numbers on our website at WILLAG.org as they're released. Right at 11 o'clock, you can follow them on the Twitter feed. It'll be embedded in our website, willag.org, or just look me up. My Twitter handle is at Commodity Week. Speaking of those numbers, about 3 weeks ago, Daryl Good and Scott Irwin took a stab at creating a supply and demand table for the 2016-17 year. We bring you next a review of that story. Well, ever since USDA released the prospective plantings report back on the 31st day of March, many have been wondering if farmers will decide to switch a few corn acres back to soybeans. The higher price of that crop seems to make this more likely. Farmers told USDA in March they would plant about 82.2 million acres of soybeans this season. This is 1% less than last year and a million acres or so less than the trade had really expected. Well, prices have rallied since then, and University of Illinois agricultural economist Daryl Good thinks that million acres could be back in play, but that it won't really change much.
Yeah, I tend to think there will be some modest switching given the price reaction we've had since that report was released. Soybeans are considerably stronger than when the survey was done, and corn prices are steady to a bit weaker than when the farmers were surveyed. So I wouldn't be surprised to see up to a million acres perhaps move away from corn to soybeans or perhaps some other crops, but again, a million acres probably doesn't alter the supply expectation very much.
However, very much, it can result in a pretty good rally. Daryl Good and colleague Scott Irwin in Illinois put together a supply and demand table for this year. They added 800,000 planted acres to soybeans, putting the figure at 83 million even. The two project this could result in a 267 million bushel ending stocks number with an average cash price of $9.45 a bushel for the year. USDA season's average cash price for soybeans for the 2015 crop is $8.75. Well, it's important to note that while the Illinois projection uses a larger planted acreage figure, it also includes a much lower average yield. Good says there are two reasons for this.
Our calculation of trend yield for both corn and soybeans would be a bit less than USDA's calculated trend, so we start a little lower than they start. And then we continue to monitor the El Nino episode that tends to be fading pretty quickly right now, and that suggests to us that we may have an elevated risk of below trend yields this year. So We start with a lower trend yield on corn, 166.2, and then I'd want to fade that three or four bushels in my expectation right now. We'd start at 45.2 bushels on soybeans and fade that a bushel or so based on the El Nino.
Actually, the projection is down 1.2 bushels to the acre for a projected nationwide average yield of 44. USDA will release its first projection of the current growing season supply and demand tables May 10th. Those numbers, most assuredly, will not yet update acreage, nor are they likely to include a deviation from trend line based on summer weather predictions. Let's talk a little bit about the cash grain market. Now Brian Stark from the Andersons is on the phone line. Good afternoon to you, Brian. Thanks for being with us.
Good afternoon, Todd. Glad for having me.
Here in Champaign County, farmers are stalled out. What are they telling you about field conditions and their feelings at this time?
I think we're a little wet in areas, especially as you go further east and then south. So the southeastern quadrant of the state of Illinois obviously has the most rain and furthest behind. But for most intensive purposes, a lot of guys around our area have gotten most of their corn planted and are trying to find an open window to plant beans. But obviously this week isn't going to be very conducive to playing catch up.
And tomorrow's USDA report, what are your expectations?
Well, I think there's critical numbers. Obviously, the trade's going to be interested to see if they change the demand figures with the excess rain on the Argentine bean crop, as well as the dry conditions on the Safrina crop in Brazil. I think the old crop carryout could see a bump in exports on beans and or corn. But the bigger ones are probably looking at the new crop S&D tables for the first time. Obviously, the government's going to use the March acreage intentions. We won't know if we've bought enough bean acres to switch from corn till June 30th. So I'm expecting to see a pretty big corn carryout printed tomorrow. And obviously, I think that's what the trade is going to be looking at.
And the trade likely to dismiss that number, knowing full well it might change by the time we get to June?
I think there may be some pause, given the way beans have responded to corn here and against corn here in the last couple of weeks. But again, you can't fight the tape, and I think obviously they're going to respect the number, giving the above average planting pace nationwide in corn would lend to believe that we might see as many acres, even though in the back of their mind we probably have switched some to soybeans.
And your bids for the day.
Cash corn tonight is 363. New crop corn is 352. Cash soybeans, 1002. New crop beans for fall 16, 991. And new crop July wheat is 441.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers, helping farm families succeed for 100 years.
It's National Butterscotch Brownie Day. Samuel Parkinson began making butterscotch candy in 1817. The candy had royal approval, and it was one of England's attractions until it ceased production in 1977. The recipe was revived in 2003. On this day in agricultural history in 1787, James Pollard Espy was born, an American meteorologist. He was one of the first to collect meteorological observations by telegraph. In 1845, Carl Gustav Patrick de Lava was born, a Swedish scientist. He invented a continuous centrifugal cream separator, which he patented in 1894. Milk flowed into the machine in a small and continuous stream and was whirled and separated as it passed through, the cream leaving from one aperture and the skimmed milk from another. He also designed a vacuum milking machine. However, it was not until after he died that the company he founded made its first commercially practical milking machine. And in 1914, C.W. Post died. He founded the Postum Cereal Company in 1895. In 1922, the company was renamed General Foods Corporation. Its earliest cereal product debuted in 1897, and you can still find Grape Nuts on grocery shelves today. A 1904 cereal went by the name of Elijah's Manna. It's better known today as Post Toasties. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support of the Friends of WILL and Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Monday afternoon. Let's check now what's happening with the agricultural weather markets. That with Mark Russo. He's at Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Mark.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the kind of weather producers, especially in the local area, East Central Illinois, might be working under, maybe more likely not working under over the next week or so.
Well, certainly, Todd, following the relatively dry and open weather of the past week, the pattern going forward will trend more active this week as we see two systems move across the Midwest and Delta, one of which is here right in front of us in the next couple of days, and another later scheduled for this week. So that'll cause some delays here in planting progress. We do see a period of fair and dry weather after that for a period of time before then another system works its way into the Midwest. So all in all, the pattern of dry weather interspersed by periods of wetness will keep planting progress at a generally steady pace. So, you know, not ideal, but also it's not like you're completely halting things, and it should make for a general steady pace as we go through this middle part of May, or in middle to even latter part of May.
When you look further out, there apparently will be some colder temperatures. How cool, and do we have to worry about anything in Minnesota and the parts of the Dakotas, maybe the great Canadian growing regions?
Yeah, certainly there's going to be a great deal of variability in temperatures. And the one item to watch is this colder period by this weekend into the first part of next week. Temperatures do not look to drop to levels that would be a risk here for any newly emerged corn, but it is certainly something to keep an eye on as we progress towards this cold weather event. We are forecasting temperatures dropping into the 30s, but for there to be really any kind of problematic readings, you'd have to drop into the 20s for numerous hours. And at the present time, the setup does not appear there. But again, we're not that far off, and that's why this warrants close watching going forward. Up north in the areas of Canada, the one item to watch is dryness there. And we saw some heat, and obviously the headlines are with the big wildfire by Fort McMurray. But for the prairies, and let alone the fire area, they need precipitation. And while the fire area does not look to receive much here over the next 10 days, there is some dryness in southern Saskatchewan that looks to receive significant precip. So you're not eliminating the dryness in Canada, but certainly there will be some reduction here going forward.
Do we have concerns that the smoke from the fire area will be able to blot out enough of sunlight that it will contribute to lower temperatures across large swaths of the United States or North America?
No, Todd. With the smoke situation, you're dealing with a heavier particulate there, which stays at the lower levels of the atmosphere. And so if when you have rain systems that basically takes out the smoke from the atmosphere, and thus it's not like a seasonal or any kind of climate indication, much different than volcanic ash.
Hey, thanks so much.
My pleasure, Todd.
That's Mark Russo, and he wraps up